This is a podcast from Consilio. We bring people together to create better places.
Hello and welcome to Better Places, a podcast from Consilio where we talk about planning, property and politics from across the capital and beyond.
It's rebranded.
It has rebranded.
They've rebranded it, you fool.
We used to be called Poles Apart.
Ever?
And then Luke and I realised we weren't actually poles apart.
No, very close together.
Both very sensible people. Yeah. But so we've changed the name to Better Places, and I think, you know, that better reflects what we're doing.
Trying to do.
Which is?
That would have been great. If we were word perfect, then that would have been brilliant. But we weren't. But no, yeah, we thought it was a better representation of what we're talking about, why we're chatting to people.
Which is to create better places. So... last time we spoke to you, Boris Johnson was still the Prime Minister.
Mm.
Interest rates were still low.
Mm.
And we didn't have a king.
Mm.
So it's been an eventful summer and early autumn. And we've got some great guests coming up on this new series.
Series or season?
I think series.
Is one of them Americanized?
Yeah, let's go with series.
Okay.
So in this new series of Better Places podcast from Consilio. So we're going to be coming to you once every couple of weeks for the next couple of months and hopefully talk to a lot of local government leaders about how they're making sense of all of the chaos.
And parliamentarians.
And parliamentarians, indeed. So this episode is a bit of a trailer, really, a bit of a this is what's to come, but we also are going to talk about party conference season.
Party by name, not party by nature.
No, definitely not party by nature. But, well, I think I was at the Conservative one and it felt
yours
more
definitely
like,
wasn't.
Well, it felt more like a wake. So does that count as a party? I don't think it does.
No.
No, I'm sort of being a bit facetious. But we are back from conference season.
Yep.
And so Luke was in Liverpool at Labour conference. I was in Birmingham for Conservative conference. And actually, it was quite interesting. Lots of things flying around about planning, property and development, as well as the general stability of government and all the rest of it.
The chaos that surrounds it all.
So we're also going to have a guest on a little bit later on to make a bit of sense of some of that.
Yep, Councillor Sharma Tatler from Brent is going to come on and give us her take on Labour Party conference and some of what was announced.
Loyal listeners will remember her from an earlier episode of the
early
podcast.
Days.
Early days of the podcast when she came on to talk about regeneration in Brent. But yeah, it'll be interesting to get her take on the mood of the Labour Party. But so, Luke, Liverpool, it looked very disciplined, very ordered on TV. What was the mood?
Yeah, it's a very very strange experience for the Labour Party to be disciplined and organised and optimistic. But
well,
it was...
it's only been 14 years.
God.
No, not quite that long.
Yeah, pretty much. No, it was. It was very optimistic. It was very positive. I think the mood music going in was very beneficial in terms of what was happening with the markets and what was happening with the government. But it was a very focused conference. The messaging was very strong, very clear. I was going to say very clear.
Very clear.
But it was both clear and clear.
Clear and clear.
Yeah, and lots of very interesting stuff. Lots of policy announcements. But crucially, I met Jordan Henderson on the train coming back from the England game, which was coming back from the England game. I wasn't. I wasn't selected this time. But
clearly, the highlight of the trip,
hands down, absolutely hands down. What I would say is he was wearing an England tracksuit walking through the centre of Liverpool, which must be
hometown.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
a
nice.
Great feeling.
That is nice.
But no, it was really positive. I think there's a sense in the Labour Party that an election victory is now achievable.
On the cards, really.
Well, yeah. I mean, current polling. We've seen over the last, I was going to say a couple of months, but a couple of years, how quickly things can change. And
true, but this polling is something you can tell, we've never seen.
You
before.
Can tell Nathan's still a little bit down from Birmingham. but no, yeah, it's true. You know, we're not used to being this far ahead in the polls. And, you know, while we're still probably a decent stretch out from the next general election, we're probably looking at, spring 24?
Yeah, I think Nadim Zahawe was on the Sunday shows this week and alluded to an election being up to 2 years away. So we could end up with an autumn 2024 election. But look, you know, you never know when things are going to come. Can't see the government calling an election anytime soon, unless they wanted complete wipeout. But look, what was interesting for me, just looking at Labour conference from the outside, was normally there is some sort of disastrous gaffe. There's infighting. There's, because it's also like a policy-making forum, which is very different from Conservative conference.
Yeah.
It just looked very, very disciplined, which I know everyone has already said. Do you think there was enough? There was definitely discipline on messaging and behaviour.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I've heard, it was full up with lobbyists and professionals looking to get the ear of the new Labour administration.
It was.
But do you think there was enough detail to actually satisfy, you know, satisfy people, but also business, that Labour have the answers to a lot of the key questions? And if we bring it back to planning and development generally, do you think there was enough on that? What did they say about that, actually?
It's a good question. I mean, I'm inclined to think that actually you don't necessarily need... It depends what you think conference is for, right? And as you say, for those of you who aren't sort of deep-level policy geeks and politics geeks, Labour Party conferences is structured very differently to the Conservative one, so we have delegates who attend...
Yours was disciplined and ordered. Ours is definitely not.
So we have delegates who are... nominated by constituencies who go and vote on various policy decisions from the conference floor. So in a large conference hall, you may occasionally see those sort of clips on the news when it's a light news day of people standing up and down and asking questions and various sort of panels and discussions. So in some ways it is a sort of policy making event and body. But in reality, it doesn't necessarily tie the party's hands. And actually, you know, for 95% of the population, it is about what the top line message coming out of those party conferences is. So going back to what you just asked about whether or not I thought there was enough detail and depth to what was said, I actually don't think it matters too much how much policy depth there was. But it was far more about the clarity of the messaging. You know, I think realistically people probably only pull out one or two things when they sort of glimpse coverage of party conferences.
Yeah, but it is interesting, isn't it? Because we're now all sitting here. I think it's very likely that we're going to have a Labour government in potentially up to 2 years, but possibly before.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not saying there's certainty at all at the moment with what the government's proposing, because there isn't. We'll come to that in a minute. But Keir Starmer said things like, you know, we want to get to 70% home ownership.
Mm-hmm.
Build more homes, sort out the planning process, all that stuff, none of which seems particularly easy. And I hope now that maybe that there will be some more policies. I mean, what was the key, if we bring it back to planning and development, what were the key things that Labour were saying in terms of, even if no detail, but just objective and ambition?
So Lisa Nandy, who is the shadow levelling up secretary and who leads on, amongst other things, Labour's housing policy, her sort of key takeaway was council housing. So she wanted to make social housing the second largest tenure in the UK, again, behind home ownership. And sort of estimates vary, but that means something in the region of 400,000 new council homes being built.
Across the next parliament or...
Well,
to get to
that point.
Oh, right, okay. So, in total.
Yeah, and to go back to what you said about sort of detail, you know, it is, I think parties, especially when they think they're 18 months, 2 years out from an election, are probably less inclined to put fixed dates and times and spends on policies because...
Well, they don't need to.
And also, you know the opposition are going to sort of go over that and tear it apart and say, you know, this is how much it will cost and this is why it's not deliverable. So there weren't sort of fixed time frames, but I think it is more about aspiration and direction of travel. But... home ownership. So as you said, Keir talked about 70% home ownership. Lisa talked about making social housing the second largest UK tenure again. And their sort of primary push about how they were going to deliver this was to take decision-making power and resource away from central government and give it back to local authorities and to councils. And again, this is sort of quite broad stroke policy.
Yeah.
And plays particularly well with Labour members and sort of Labour voters who are engaged with this kind of stuff. And I'm sure that over the next sort of few weeks and months, we'll see more of that fleshed out. But it is sort of big signal of intent stuff in terms of direction of travel.
Yeah.
On planning reform, the Labour position was slightly more critical of the government's failed attempts to push through planning reform, and I guess we'll talk in a minute about, from the Conservative side, what that looks like in terms of planning reform, whether or not there's a fight to be had on the government benches. There is a consensus view that something has to change, that we're never going to be able to build out in the numbers that we need to in the current system. And actually there was a report from Lichfield out yesterday or the day before yesterday that looked at 60 small site applications, and the average time from validation to determination has now gone up to 60 weeks, so 14 months. Everyone we're working with is feeling those delays. You know, we've got local authorities that are under increasing pressure and feel under-resourced. So the Labour Party, you know, is clear that something has to change. Interestingly, Keir said that, you know, speculators can't stop communities from getting shovels in the ground.
No.
So there is a, you know, and again, it's quite broad stroke stuff, and it does in some ways play to the Labour base. But the intent behind that messaging, I think, is that they want to put more control into local authorities and communities' hands to deliver the developments they want to deliver. Now,
everyone says that, I think. It's.
Yeah, and you know, the lived experience, the point at which the rubber meets the road on that, is that actually in most places, people, you know, agree that more homes need to be built, but just not here. And that's
which
the
is a constant challenge.
Yeah.
But, so, you know, I actually think there's, you know, just the Labour Party engaging on all of these issues that actually matter to people is welcome, as compared to some other party conferences in recent years where it sort of felt like some, you know, sideshow, really, talking about issues that are just not in the mainstream at all for most of the population.
Yep.
So, anyway, that completely, I suppose, contrasts with Conservative conference. And I think this was my eighth Conservative conference, so
consecutive.
Bar the COVID break.
Yeah.
And so the first one I went to was in 2014, which was just before Cameron, just before the election, the 2015 election.
Yeah.
So it was the last one before that, and it was all about the long term economic plan. And you know, I think everybody thought it was going to be a hung parliament, and then turn up
simpler times.
They really were simpler times, but. So you see, I've seen that, then I've seen the sort of Brexit days, the Theresa May conferences, the Boris rally type conferences, all sorts. Mm-hmm. I think there's always two different sections to conference. There's the what happens in the main hall with the speeches and the very stage managed, press controlled aspects of it. There's then hundreds of events happening all around that, where ministers, former ministers, prominent backbenchers, activists, and lots of other people go and speak. And for the party, the whole thing is kind of an exercise in not letting them say the wrong thing to deviate from the key message that the main party wants to put forward.
And how did that go down in Birmingham?
I think that I arrived in Birmingham on the Saturday, and it really kicks off on the Sunday. And Michael Gove was lined up to do what is now the Laura Koonsberg show on the Sunday morning, and sort of effectively fired the starting pistol in what was 3 days of ill discipline and freestyling from both cabinet members and backbenchers, and a general sort of disquiet over the current administration's leadership. But what was interesting is, whilst all of that was playing out, there were lots of fringe events going on and lots of sort of policy-based discussions going on with junior ministers in the new government. So I was on a panel with Lee Rowley, the new housing minister.
That was cool.
Yeah, it was good. And we were talking about basically how to get more SME builders into the sector and what are their big challenges. And without a doubt, planning tops that list. So everybody says planning tops that list. That's the key concern. One of the stats, similar to your stat about how long it takes to get a determination, was
it's a good stat.
Yeah, it is a good stat. But here's another one for you: that it's to build 100 units, so 100 houses, which is what, you know, most small builders would be looking at trying to achieve, now costs about £750,000 for the application, and it's very difficult. And that's before you've done anything, so it's difficult to get finance for that amount of money on a speculative site. And that's because of delays, because of reports, because of all of that stuff. But the one thing that kept coming out was an under-resourcing of planning departments. And I think,
yes,
you know, you can't ignore the fact that planning departments are under a lot of pressure. Officers are under a lot of pressure. And as a result, this is affecting growth, to coin the phrase of the day. So that under investment and the way that it's not working, you've had more policies added before you submit an application, things are taking a lot longer. You know, that is kind of, we all see it every day. It's probably one of the things that's causing loads of problems. So anyway, I put a lot of this to the housing minister on this panel.
I bet he loved you.
And, I think the general view was, I'm 26 days into the job and I'm in listening mode, which I guess is essential. You can
it's
say.
A good shield for a little while.
It is for our 14th housing minister in 10 years or whatever it is. But if Liz Truss and the government are serious about being pro-growth, getting things moving, getting the economy moving, I don't see how any of that can be achieved without really sorting out planning. And I don't think that means another white paper on, you know, massive changes that you're going to have a 6-month battle to get through with your backbenchers and everything else. It just feels to me that there are some things that you can do within the current system to just make it work.
So as the anti-growth coalition voice in this room,
why do you hate growth?
I don't know. I just,
it's a shame.
I just found myself in a coalition. You know, what did you want to hear, or what do you think you'll want to hear over the next few months? What do you think can be done fairly quickly without, like you say, white papers, years of going back and forth fighting with backbenchers over, you know, sort of a NIMBYist approach?
So what I said in the panel is, and I think this is still the view, is anything you can do to make the planning system more certain and make it faster will deliver results. Right, so how you achieve that is going to be different in different places. And I do understand it. For a lot of local government policymakers, when they've got concerns from residents, they reach for policy, right? So they say, well, we're going to apply this new policy as a test for developers or a test for whatever. And what you end up with is a whole load of policy documents that just add further burdens in some cases, some justified and some not. And that, in my view, increases the cost and delays the
it's
time
like that,
and the application.
That obstacle course on Crufts.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly that. So something I would do if I was there straight away would be to actually just have an assessment of, you know, how many of those are actually necessary. Can you reduce the size of them so you have a maximum 2 pages per report, key bullet points only? They might actually get read at that point. And, you know, I don't know, things like that. It feels to me that there are ways to simplify the system to reduce the burden on planners, but whilst maintaining democratic accountability in the system, but by making it faster and more certain. And I think until we achieve that, it's going to be very difficult to actually unlock masses of growth, because it affects everything, you know, infrastructure. You know, when people are spending so much money on housing costs, they have very little money for everything else. And then that has an indirect impact on the economy, has an impact on birth rates, it has an impact on absolutely everything. It's, you know, it's a real challenge for the economy unless we build the houses the country needs.
Yeah.
But anyway, so back to conference itself, it was, you know, a weird mood of a lot of people kind of ignoring what was happening, whilst there was a bar and a lot of drinks flying around, and that's why I say it felt a bit like a wake.
Yeah, lots of dark humour.
Yeah, I think. Look, I think there was this mood going around that we are not behaving in a way that means we deserve to win the next election. And I think unless that's rectified pretty quickly, the British people tend to make a sensible choice.
Yeah. Do you think it can be turned around?
Look, I think the point is that there's no point in not trying to turn it around, because whatever way you cut it, it's going to be 2 years before an election. So the government has to get competent very quickly, because otherwise we're all going to suffer from that incompetence, for want of a better word. And actually, a lot of the stuff they're trying to do is quite good. It's just, can they get it through, how quickly, and can they explain it to people properly?
Yeah, I was going to say the communication feels as big a challenge as almost anything else.
Yeah, agreed. So I think in the next few weeks we're going to see a lot more on planning, a lot more on how to, what does growth actually mean, how do you go for growth, how do you actually get that working. And it, you know, if the government can just double down and focus on that, it is possible that they're going to be able to get some stuff done. But it's going to be really tough.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not to mention the fact that it's a global, there's lots of global headwinds everywhere at the moment. You know, it's a bad time market-wise.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's not, this is another reason why now is probably not the time to change the government straight away and do all that kind of stuff. It's just more disruption. We just need to do what we need to do quickly. To
strong and stable government.
We need a long-term economic plan.
Oh, I love all the classics.
A plan for the many, not the privileged few.
So that's a snapshot of our conference experience. I think Labour take the victory.
I think so. I think it's very, well, it's like, you know, I think it's very much 1-0.
Yeah.
But a week's a long time in politics, so let's see where we are by the next conference season, because that's the thing, still another whole round of this to go through before the next election.
Oh, God.
It's a long time to hold everything together.
I wonder which England international I'll meet at next year's conference.
Yeah, well, yeah. Who will it be?
Rhys James.
Be nice for you.
Be lovely. Well, that's us giving you an overview of our experience, but should we get Sharma Tatler on to tell us about what she thought of Labour Party conference?
Yep, let's do it.
Hi, Sharma.
Hiya, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. How are you doing?
Really good. Upbeat. Good conference for us.
We had a quick 70-minute chat before we pressed record, and you were a little bit croaky from conference.
Well, it was a good conference, you know, kind of living it up.
was it karaoke that did you?
Yes, I think it was. Although I didn't sing, so I was just joining in the fun, you know.
That's always the safest bet. Sean, thank you for joining us. So, talking about conference, how did you find Liverpool? What did you think of the mood?
You know what? I really enjoyed it. It felt inclusive, it felt upbeat, it felt optimistic, it felt there was a real good energy. And I think it wasn't just the fact that the Tories were starting to implode and we saw what Liz Truss was about. I think it really felt like there was stuff that we could go out to our residents with and a real energy about what a Labour Britain post 12 years of austerity could look like and what our principles would be. And it just, it felt welcoming in a way that I've sort of missed, I think.
It's a weird feeling, right? So I did a little write-up when I got back from Liverpool, and I started it by basically saying it was a really like a quite buoyant, optimistic, you know, almost not celebratory, because I think the sort of economic backdrop was looking increasingly dark. But there was this real sense that actually this was a Labour Party that was looking out to the country and sort of felt that general election success was within its grasp. And it's a really alien feeling as a Labour Party member at a Labour Party conference to feel that way.
And it genuinely felt like we were talking about answers for solutions that were 21st century solution problems. So we were coming up with policies around Great British Energy, for example, that takes in and talks about, I think, left-wing ideals and our values and principles, but making it relevant to what we need today. And I think we've been missing that for a while. And that's exciting. And I remember coming away thinking, actually, I can't wait to go back on the doorstep, you know. And that's been hard over the last few general elections, to think, you know, bringing the energy back. And it just felt really, really healthy. It didn't feel like it was a toxic environment. It felt safe, a good, safe and happy space. And that's essentially what we should be doing. And it felt like that was being projected out to the public as well.
Yeah, definitely. You were on a couple of panels and spoke at a few events. What was your diary looking like?
My diary was packed with housing related and regeneration related panels and events, as would be standard. And really interesting discussions. So I had one on high streets and town centres with the Fabian Society, talking about what we're doing in Brent and celebrating that, notwithstanding some of the economic difficulties that businesses are having. Mm-hmm. And then one on housing policy and are we, you know, where are we heading and are we doomed to fail? And I suppose my takeaway from that is Labour needs to be really bold on housing policy. I think there is a real risk that we are entering a generational divide in terms of outlook of housing policy across all parties, not just ours. And we need to be bold. And 2 years' time, when we do get election, when we do get into power, because I do think we will win the next general election, we need to be brave and not cautious about house building. And not just social housing, which is massively important, but all 10 years of housing, because there's just a massive shortage, and we're letting down a whole generation of people if we don't.
Yeah. And I think, well, it was a feature of, you know, Keir talked about home ownership. Lisa Nandy, obviously from her brief in Levelling Up, covers housing, and you know, housing was the cornerstone of her speech in a lot of ways, in terms of setting out some sort of bold, ambitious stuff. What did you think about the policy announcements, what you heard?
I think they're great. I think we hold a standard that social housing is something that we will always do, which is really important. But that wider piece around 70% of home ownership and the mortgages pledge is actually something that we should be. We are the party of aspiration. We are the party of meritocracy. So that is part of that narrative. You know, we've got generations of people where we said to them, go through school, do well, go to university, you'll get a graduate job, you'll be able to afford the lifestyle that you perhaps didn't, your parents didn't enjoy. Mm. And actually, we're at a real critical stage where that may not be possible for a lot of people. I think, you know, I'm 40, I might have been the last of that generation where that timeline or that narrative worked. So we need to going back to that. And I think the headlines work, and I'm really pleased to see conversations about planning reform, about kind of what that would look like to support us. I just want to see some detail now, what that would actually look like and how brave we're going to be around that. And more conversations about local government, because without local government, none of this is going to be possible.
Well, that was the big thing, right? That sort of ran through, I think it was sort of a narrative that ran through Keir's speech. I also think it ran through Lisa's as well, which was putting power and decision-making back in the hands of councils and communities. And presumably that's something, you know, you in your capacity would relish to have that power and I guess the resource that comes with it as well.
This is the thing. So the power and responsibility is great. And I think there are still tweaks that need to be made in some of those powers and what we're accountable for and what a developer, say, for example, is accountable for. I think there are still things that could be changed. But the resourcing is massively important. You know, austerity has decimated local government, and we're not seen as the same way as schools and the NHS are in terms of safeguarding or ring fencing our budgets, because people automatically think, you know, your council tax pays for councils, or for most councils, council tax doesn't nowhere near cover what we expend. So resourcing needs to be really, really looked at. And I think if Lisa and Rachel's team were able to kind of talk about what that would look like for local government and how we structure local government funding to enable all that to happen, that would be in the right direction. You know, the current situation is that most councils will struggle to fulfill balanced books, I think, with inflation costs of running services, interest rates in terms of capital building programs are skyrocketing, so things are becoming unaffordable. So we need to make sure that we are putting the right legislative changes, but resourcing local government to do so.
Yeah, and I think, so Lisa in her speech talked about returning social housing, council housing, back to the second largest tenure type behind home ownership. Keir talked about 70% home ownership as an aspiration. Obviously, a few people did sort of back of the envelope calculations, and it was 400,000 council homes that we need to be built. And it will be down to local authorities like yours to deliver that on the ground, right?
Yeah, it definitely will be. And I don't think it's impossible. I think it's ambitious, which is what we should be. And we're making up for years of not being able to do that. And I think what will need to happen is boroughs like mine, we will deliver. And we've taken, you know, myself and my leader have taken personal scars on that journey to make sure that we're house building. And we will continue to do that, because this is a strategy and a policy that goes beyond our life cycle. It's for the next generation. So I'm happy to continue doing that. But we've got to make sure that all councils and local government sort of play up, or not play up, but fulfill their obligations on that as well. It can't just be what we've got at the moment, where some councils are doing it and not other councils. So how do you level the playing field to make sure that councils are the second biggest landlord, you know, in the country, or the biggest house builder? So it's got to be equitable, and it can't just be loaded on, at the moment, what feels like Labour councils.
It's interesting, talking about, you touched on planning reform, and I think there is a consensus view from all sides around planning development that the status quo doesn't work. And you talked about having taken some sort of political scars as a, you know, I think you probably say sort of a pro-development borough. You know, you want to build the homes that your residents need to have a safe and secure place to live. Is there a risk? You know, you can see the Conservatives tearing themselves apart around planning reform because, you know, this inherent NIMBYism that tends to take hold when people start to talk about development in their own areas. You know, they're all for building more homes so long as they're just across the boundary or far enough away that it doesn't cause them a headache. Is there a danger that you think Labour finds itself in a similarly difficult position where there is broad agreement that something fundamental has to change, but we can't quite decide what it is that needs to change?
Possibly. And I think rather than our argument being what the Conservative argument is about development or no development, I think our argument may end up being about what kind of development. So how much social housing are you going to be able to extract from any one development? My experience is that Labour councillors want to build, they see the need, but what they want to see is increased social housing on any site. So in order for, and I'm completely for that. I'd love to see as much social housing coming forward, but unless you change viability to enable the 50% policy that most councils in London, for example, have, that's not going to be the case. So do we need to reconcile the fact that 35%, 20% of something is better than 0% of nothing in terms of social housing? Yeah. So I think our argument is going to be about social housing versus other tenures, and how much are we willing to say, what do we need more of? And I personally think we need stock of everything, because not everyone's going to be eligible for social housing. Young people want to go onto the housing ladder. Older people may want to downsize. You want to free up family homes. We need to make sure the whole cycle or the whole sector is working, not just in social housing, which is an absolute need for. But social housing is there because there's a lot of my families or a lot of my council housing waiting lists are there because the private sector, there isn't enough supply. So if there's enough supply in non-social housing tenures that brings down the price of housing generally, you're releasing pressure everywhere. And that's what I think we need to reconcile as a party about how bold are we going to be? Because my view is that supply in every tenure is the issue.
Yeah. And you talked about Labour being bold and brave going into the next election. We've got a bit of a taster. You know, we've got another round of conferences before the next election, at least one. You know, we're talking about let's say spring or autumn 2024 general election, which still feels like an awful long time to wait. But what else would you like to see Labour talking about and bringing forward over the next, you know, 18 months around planning and development?
I think strengthening the link about sustainability and climate emergency with housing and planning, and what role can be played. And how we strengthen local government. I think they're the bits that I would like to see fleshed out a little bit more. It may not be as sexy, and it may be very sort of internal for those of us that are councillors and know local government. But actually, what I'd want to see coming forward is not just the big policy announcements, but the mechanism of how that's going to be delivered. So talk about actual delivery, what it will look like. So on day dot, the minute we get in, you know, that Friday after the election, how do we hit the ground running? This is what a Labour government would do. But specifically, I'd love to see CPOs simplified. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a really crude kind of very technical thing, but a current compulsory purchase order takes almost 2 years, if not more, to get through. So I would want to see that streamlined. I'd look at land value tax, potentially looking at how we legislate that, and how we reform viability. Currently, viability requires would mean that a developer looks at 15, 16% profit. But actually, is there not something that we can say, we'll bring it down between 5 and 10, which then makes more schemes more viable, that then makes more affordable viable? So looking along that, and in places like London, 5 to 10% long-term is still a really, really good profit margin. So, you know, that they're the things that I would look at, tweaking what we've already got and strengthening what works well. But CPOs, viability and land value, are the bits that I would want to see looked at, because land value is prohibiting smaller house builders, let alone the big guys.
Yeah. And presumably the ask to Lisa Nandy and to Matthew Pennycook, our shadow housing minister, will be to get local government around the table to talk about the stuff you guys are doing, the innovative stuff that you're doing that's actually delivering homes on the ground, and feed that into Labour's policy.
Yep. Open invitation. I'm more than happy to take Lisa and Matthew around Brent and show them what we do. Meet some of the families that have benefited from what we've done over the last sort of 6-7 years in terms of house building and life chances that have improved, and show that Labour administration can deliver that. So what is it that Labour government can push to strengthen that? And I'm happy to, but definitely come and speak to us, because we're on the ground taking the hits happily. But we want to see kind of strengthening from government to do that.
I'll make sure that message is passed on.
Thank you.
John, thank you so much for joining us. Go and drink some hot water and lemon. I think that helps.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's it from us. Thanks for listening to the first episode of Better Places. We hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back next week with another episode. And also, you can visit our back catalogue of former Poles Apart episodes.
All the classics.
All the classics, and all future episodes on our brand new shiny podcast page on our website, which can be found at conciliocomms.com/better-places. Don't forget to like and subscribe on all podcast platforms, and we hope to see you soon.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.